Our guest today is Jesse Hagopian. He's a high school teacher in Seattle, Washington. He is a leader in the movement against standardized testing, which he'll be telling us about today. He's an editor at Rethinking Schools magazine and is the author of the book More Than a Score, The New Uprising Against High Stakes Testing. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
How did you get into this whole movement? Tell us a little bit about your own background. This really goes back to your own childhood and schooling.
Well, that's for sure. These tests humiliated me, and I can remember vividly the first time I ever saw my standardized test scores in third grade. I remember the blue line that showed the average score and the black dot all the way at the bottom representing me. And I knew from that moment until probably about halfway through college that I wasn't intelligent, and I had the test scores to prove it. What I realized in college was that it wasn't that I was below average or underachieving. It's that I just had skills that didn't easily register on standardized tests. So I could communicate my ideas out loud, but that doesn't register on a standardized test, right? I was a musician and had musical capabilities and talents, but that didn't register either. In college, those things were encouraged and promoted, and it no longer became about eliminating wrong answer choices and filling in A, B, C, D bubbles. At that level, they wanted me to be able to develop arguments, to do research, and often to make presentations, and I was able to do that. That's when I first began to realize how limited a measure standardized testing really is.
It's actually pretty amazing that you made it to college. A lot of people whose self-esteem is hurt by those tests or by their poor education that gives rise partly to poor tests don't even make it as far as you did.
Yeah, I mean, I was very fortunate that my family had the resources to send me to SAT prep classes, because if I hadn't, I would have never made it into college. And I had to take those classes over and over again, and I had to take the SAT over and over again. And in those classes, I was trained how to spot the distractor questions, right? How to eliminate wrong answer choices. So then I got a score good enough to get me into school. But it made me realize, is this really what we want to train our young people to do? To eliminate wrong answer choices better than others? To spot distractor questions? Or do we want to train them to think, to be creative, to be empathetic, to learn how to collaborate with each other? And I think that's a clear choice for most parents. And I think that's one of the things driving this opt-out movement across the country, is parents, students, and teachers have a much bigger vision for what the purpose of education is, not just to train students, but to empower them.
There's so many sides to this question, because the people who do well on those tests are people who, as you say, learn to think in that standardized way. And thinking in a standardized way doesn't necessarily mean that you are best for the profession that you are going to in the future. So in other words, if we have lots of professionals, teachers, lawyers, doctors, nurses, whose claim to fame is that they can spot distractor questions, you wonder how well those professions are functioning.
That's right. I mean, our students aren't standardized, so our assessments can't be either if they're really going to be meaningful. Once you leave public education, the standardized tests aren't really part of your everyday job anymore, right? Whatever profession or activity or community organizing that you dedicate yourself to, it's very rare that you'll be filling in multiple choice bubbles in your career. And that's one of the things that I think really encouraged our staff at Garfield High School, where I teach, to fight for an alternative. You know, at my school, the entire staff in 2013 voted unanimously to refuse to give the MAP test. After that vote, the superintendent threatened the entire staff with a 10-day suspension without pay, and not a single staff member backed down. And it became this incredible struggle that electrified Seattle. The MAP boycott spread to other schools around our city, and then it even went national and international, as we got thousands upon thousands of signatures of support And I think it helped to ignite this opt-out movement that's spreading around the country.
How did you come to the point where you, as a group, as a unanimous group of teachers at your school, decided not to administer the test?
It started for me with one teacher who gave me a call and said she needed to talk to me after school. And so I went to Mallory Clark's classroom. She was a reading specialist, and she just sat me down and looked me in the eye and said, "I'm not giving this test this year." It was a really exciting moment for me because I had been organizing against this test for years since they brought it in to the price tag of $4 million, money that we all thought should be spent on tutors or after-school programs or lowering class size instead of one more way to rank and sort our kids. And they wanted to use it to not only evaluate students, but also tie it to teacher evaluations. Mallory Clark was very clear. She has the data and an incredible track record at Garfield High School of taking students that enter our school, sometimes at a fourth grade reading level or below, and getting them to grade level within the year. She said, "You know how I do that? I use the revolutionary technology of a book." Right? If I want to know what reading level they're at, I could sit them in front of a computer three times a year to take the MAP test, or I could have them read level books and find out what reading level they're at. And then I actually know the specific challenges they're having with reading. And so once it was clear she was going to refuse to give this test, we began organizing the faculty, and we went department by department having meetings to find out, is this test useful to you? Do you get any assessment data that helps drive your instruction? Uniformly, every instructor said it was completely useless, and the entire faculty was willing to take a stand for a struggle for authentic assessments.
What constitutes authentic assessments?
I think authentic assessments have to be assessments that have the students actually engaged in the skill that they will be performing in real life. So an example that I've recently I'm writing about comes from an article that is actually quite hostile to authentic assessment. There's a website called Education Post that's part of what I call the testocracy, The multi-billionaires who are promoting more and more high-stakes testing. And they said, of course students are more than a score, but how could it hurt to give them a test? We take swimming tests all the time before we swim. You take a driver's test before you drive. And to that, I would say those are perfect examples of the tests that we're in favor of. Because a swimming test, you get in the water and you swim, right? A driver's test, someone actually watches you drive. Imagine if we did swimming tests like we do standardized testing in school, where you sit down, you fill in bubbles about the different types of strokes or how to swim, and then we throw you into the deep end if you get a good score. That's ludicrous. In the public schools, there are really innovative programs around the country that do performance-based assessments. So the students are actually engaged in the type of work, research, and learning that they'll be engaged in the real world. And it works much like when someone gets their PhD. Because at the PhD level, they actually want you to be able to think, not just eliminate wrong answer choices. So you do research over time, you develop a thesis. If the research doesn't match the thesis, you revise your thesis. And then at the end of a term, you have to defend your thesis in front of a panel of experts. There's a network of schools in New York called the New York Performance Consortium. And that's how they do their assessment. They have a waiver and don't have to give any of the standardized tests, and instead have their kids basically defend their dissertation at the end of a term. And they bring in people from the community. So if you're in a language arts class, they can bring in an author from New York to help assess your writing. And that way the test, instead of being time away from learning, is actually time engaging with people in your field and can be moments of great breakthrough. Teachers aren't against tests. We invented tests, right? We just demand that these assessments be about actually understanding what our kids know and help them scaffold them to higher understanding. And you know, the myriad of high-stakes standardized tests the kids take today is about a profit industry. Right.
Right. I mean, that's one of the subtexts of this whole conversation.
Right.
Tell us more about that. I mean, first of all, how did standardized testing begin in the first place?
Well, in the American public school system, it has a really horrible history and legacy of being tied to the eugenics movement and openly white supremacist movement in the late 18, early 1900s. Actually, a man named Carl Brigham was at Stanford University, and when World War I broke out, he left and started administering standardized tests called the Alpha and Beta tests to recruits to the Army. Then he, after the war was over, transformed those tests into the SAT exam, which he wanted to use specifically as a gatekeeper to his school so that it would keep out the lower classes and keep out African Americans and keep out women. And he wrote a book called A Study in American Intelligence, which was like the manifesto of the eugenics movement, basically decrying the decline of intelligence in America compared to Europe because we had more black people here. And so to me, when you look at that origin of standardized tests, you know, by 1920, some 4 million tests were being administered in the public schools, mostly at the behest of eugenicists. You can see that this is not really a tool for equity. This is a tool for ranking and sorting children. And what the tests have always registered from the early 1900s until today is a student's zip code, a student's proximity to wealth, a student's proximity to the dominant culture, not a student's skills or aptitude. We know that if you have the money to buy test prep, you'll do better.
Your own story.
Right?
Yeah.
So the idea that these standardized tests are a way to bring equity or challenge the achievement gap in schools today is totally laughable when you understand the origins of these tests and the way they're used today, like in Chicago, where they shut down 50 schools with the stroke of a pen, schools that have been labeled failing with these tests. And so we see they're being used with high stakes attached so that you can close a kid's school down, you can deny them graduation, you can fire the teachers, all based on a test score. And instead of supporting those schools with more resources, providing the kids access to educational supports, they're just used to test and then punish.
Well, and that's another underlying issue that's going on here is that the inequality of education in the United States is so widespread. I mean, I will never forget an episode of This American Life in which they studied the state of Missouri and the black and the white schools there. And basically, it's a long and fascinating story, and everybody should go back to the podcast and listen to it. But the upshot was, if you are an African-American public school student in the state of Missouri, you cannot get a good education.
Mm. And I think that is tied back to the severe levels of poverty and institutional racism that we have in America today. A study came out last year that shows for the first time, at least in 50 years, that the majority of students attending public school today live in poverty. You can see when we have a mass incarceration system in our society, where the U.S. is the biggest jailer in world history, where we're 5% of the world's population, but 25% of the prison population, and we have more black people behind bars today than were slaves on plantations in 1850. We have a total social catastrophe of poverty and racism. And the testocracy, instead of addressing poverty and racism, want to add another test to register that inequality. So they've designed an accountability system in this country that holds those with the most power the least accountable. So we want to hold students who are homeless accountable, right? We have 125 homeless students at my high school. We want to hold them accountable, but we won't hold the state politicians who have been found in contempt of court for refusing to fully fund education. They walk around free, earning, just gave themselves a raise in Washington State even, right? So they go scot-free and are completely unaccountable for supporting our kids. And I think that's a system that's completely upside down and backwards.
We're talking to Jesse Hagopian here on the Radio Cafe. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to the Radio Cafe, and our guest today is educator Jesse Hagopian. We're talking about standardized testing, and we have a country in which not only are most states, not all, but most states fund their schools through property taxes, and so there's great inequality from one school district to another, and then you have the problem of ever-increasing and just horrifying inequality among the parents, mm-hmm. among the workers, much greater inequality than was certainly when I was in high school, and there was a lot of inequality then.
Yeah.
This is a problem that, as you say, really cannot be addressed by testing people. If you test people and see that one group does better in algebra than the other, well, no surprise. If you stop testing, or if you start giving these other kinds of tests that really assess where young people are at, you're still not addressing the fundamental problems of inequality and unequal funding, and basically a lack of commitment to the equality of all people in this country. I mean, it seems like we have a deep commitment to inequality.
Yeah, I think you're right. I saw a study that just came out that shows the richest 65 people have as much wealth as the bottom 3.5 billion people. That's just
on
horrific.
On this planet. Oh my goodness.
Horrific inequality. And that has to be addressed if we're going to have a true commitment to educating all of our children. I think that authentic assessments, however, can be part of the solution, because if we empower kids to think critically, if we empower kids to learn how to collaborate and work together with their peers, those are the skills that they're going to need to be able to build social movements to challenge that kind of inequality. So I think it's urgent that we move towards authentic assessments so that our kids develop the skills they'll need to actually talk back to power and to transform our world. And that's why I'm so excited about this opt-out movement. It's really a civil disobedience movement. It's an act of resistance that's sweeping the country. And we're in the midst of the largest uprising against high-stakes testing in U.S. history. There's never before been more parents, students, and teachers resisting this drill-and-kill rote memorization style of assessment and fighting for an alternative. And it's actually a movement that has really important antecedents. The first test resistors were Black intellectuals in the early 1900s who resisted those eugenics multiple choice tests. People like W.E.B. Du Bois, one of the founders of the NAACP, wrote at length about how these tests were designed to show Black inferiority, and also how we needed to bring resources to our schools. And really, that's the same struggle we're in today.
Now, who's getting rich off these exams?
Yeah, it's a multi-billion dollar testing industry at this point. Pearson is the most notorious of the testocracy. The Pearson Textbook and Testing Corporation is a $9 billion behemoth. They have contracts with the new Common Core tests. And then, of course, all the test prep materials that come with it. Pearson also took over the GED program in many states, and they have, in the name of rigor, increased the difficulty of the test, basically just ensuring that more and more students fail, whether it's the Common Core tests or it's the GED. They've made the tests incredibly developmentally inappropriate, and also at the higher grades, just incredibly difficult to make sure more students don't actually graduate. And there's a study that came out of Boston University recently. One of the author's names was Kevin Lang, and he shows that the number one outcome of exit exams requiring students to pass one of these high-stakes standardized tests to graduate is increased incarceration rates.
Oh my goodness.
Right? So we're seeing companies like Pearson make billions of dollars off of denying our kids graduation and sending them to prison. And we're seeing high-stakes testing become one of the major factors in the school-to-prison pipeline across this country. And I think that's why growing numbers of communities of color are joining this movement and resisting.
Now, do these companies that are making so much money off of this have power and influence in Washington through lobbying, campaign contributions, other kinds of influence?
Absolutely. They're not going to leave it up to chance to find out if they get the next contract for this state or this school district. They're spending plenty of money in the political arena to lobby for assessments that educators know don't give us good data. They don't help inform our instruction. They're really useless in terms of developing critical thinking. And so if politicians listen to the professionals and the practitioners and the educators, these tests would be gone tomorrow. But instead, they listen to testing company lobbyists.
When you were talking a moment ago about making the GED test harder, it does make me think about something that I know has happened in New Mexico at various times, is probably happening today, is that one of the ways that school administrations increase graduation rates is to lower the standards. And so you've got young people graduating who may really not have earned a degree, not mm-hmm. through any fault of their own. I mean, they're in a substandard school, and then they're being pushed out with a degree. That's no good either.
That's right. And I think that really points to the urgency, again, of moving towards authentic forms of assessment. Because if you look at the New York Consortium for Performance-Based Assessment, right, they've thrown out the high-stakes tests. They're fully public schools. They're not charters. They don't receive any extra money than the rest of the public schools. But this network of over 30 schools uses this innovative form of assessment. So to me, the question is, what are their outcomes, right? If they're just churning out diplomas and then the kids end up not doing well, then that's a clear sign that there's a problem. I think that the fact that they have the best outcomes of the entire New York City public school system shows you the potential for this form of assessment to really help in public education. So the New York Consortium has the highest graduation rates in New York, but beyond that, they also have the highest college attendance rates. They have the highest rates of completion of college. They have by far the best outcomes for their English language learner students. So they have some 77% of them graduating. They have 86% of their Black graduates being accepted into college. And so the outcomes are undeniable, and that's why the testocracy will never tell you about these schools, right? Because if they were right, the schools without the high-stakes tests would be the very worst schools in New York because they don't have the accountability measures.
Who are the kids in these schools? Does it run all demographics of New York City?
It really does. That's what's exciting about this, because oftentimes what charter schools try to do to boost their scores is exclude students that would lower their test scores. And we've seen this across the country with charter schools pushing out at-risk students. And the New York Consortium for Performance-Based Assessment actually has a higher rate of special needs students than the regular New York City public schools, and yet have far better outcomes. It really shows how important it is to empower our kids with this form of assessment. And I'm proud to say that At Garfield High School, we didn't just boycott the MAP test and say we're going to refuse to give a standardized test. We began a partnership with these schools that very year, and we've been flying to New York to sit in on lessons and go to trainings. Several other staff members at Garfield and our principal have been really immersed in their model, and I think it's one that the rest of the country would do well to emulate.
One of the things I wanted to ask you about is it's sort of a truism that in order for students to do well in school, part of it is good schools, part of it is also parent engagement. How does this movement, if it does, affect parent engagement?
Well, I think the opt-out movement is engaging parents in their students' education like never before, because they realize that there's a major problem with their resources of their kids' school going to labeling their students, ranking their students, rather than teaching their students. You know, in Chicago, they have a campaign called Let Us Teach. A study came out recently that shows the average American public school student will take 112 standardized tests in their pre-K to high school career. That's just inundating the schools with so many tests that there's no time for learning. And so parents are having to figure out what's happening in their schools in a new way and say, you know what, I want my kid to actually learn what's important to the teacher, not just what's on the next standardized test exam. And I think that's an important engagement tool. I think the other important thing to point out here is that the testocracy, the multi-billionaires, the philanthropists like Eli Broad, Bill Gates, or the Walmart family, the Waltons, they've invested so much money in promoting more and more high-stakes tests. But for their own children, what do they do for their own children?
Right.
Those kids go to elite private schools. And actually, those are the schools that should get the credit for starting the boycotts of tests, not Garfield. Right? Because you can take Lakeside, which is an elite private school just up the road from Garfield, where Bill Gates went and where he sends his kids to. They never administered the MAP test. They don't use these tests over and over because for their kids, what they want is a nurturing classroom that teaches to the whole child. They want study abroad opportunities, athletics, physical education, this really wonderful liberal arts approach to learning. But for our kids, rote memorization and performance on the next test is good enough. And that's a proposition I reject. And I'm so glad that so many thousands of parents around the country are being more engaged in their students' education and rejecting it as well.
It sounds like this movement engages students, engages parents, and also engages teachers who, I mean, there's so many people in New Mexico who are dropping out of teaching because the profession has become just untenable for them, partly because of these standardized tests, partly because of the many rules around what they are and aren't allowed to do.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really sad. The national polls around teacher morale are at an all-time low. It's clearly a result of the federal policy of No Child Left Behind, the Race to the Top initiative, the Common Core standards. All of this high-stakes standardized testing has taken the love and the joy out of teaching, and it's creating a national teacher shortage. It's having a severe impact so that passionate young people who used to want to become a teacher and help inspire young people can't join the profession anymore because they know it's just too stressful. And it's being dominated by corporations telling us what we need to teach rather than the individual passions of the educators.
Jesse Hagopian is a high school history teacher. He's the author of the book More Than a Score, The New Uprising Against High Stakes Testing. You can find out more about his work at iamaneducator.com. Jesse, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Oh, thanks a lot for having me on. This was fun.